It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Mike Elgin's here. So is Gina. So is Jeff. We're going to talk about the redesigned Google Plus. What the heck? And a whole lot more. Stay tuned. Twig is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 142, recorded April 11th, 2012. Adorkable. This Week in Google is brought to you by Stamps.com. Your time is valuable, so don't waste another minute waiting in line at the post office. Just use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, using your own computer and printer. To get my special offer, go to Stamps.com now, click on the radio microphone, and use the offer code TWIG. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIG4. And by Carbonite Online Backup, automatic, continuous, and unlimited backup for your computer files, just $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com. Use the offer code TWIG to get 2 bonus months with purchase. It's time for...
Apparently not.
Twig! This is the show where we talk about Google, the cloud, and anything Gina Trapani-Damwell wants to talk about. And that's the truth. Gina Trapani's here from SmarterWare.org, founding editor of LifeHacker.com.
Hello.
Hi, Gina. Yeah, and, you know, really, we don't want to limit ourselves to anything. It's whatever we're in the mood to talk about.
Yeah.
Chipotle, Glee, whatever. Also here, Mr. Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism at the City University of New York, blogger at blogmachine.com, buzzmachine.com.
And it's a big drinking game week, folks. You got Glee on. We got Chipotle. Leo's hungry. It's get ready to get drunk. Much fun ahead.
Now, they're calling you Iron Man, Jeff Iron Man Jarvis. Did you just do something like come back from somewhere? Or
the dead?
I don't know why the chat room's calling you Iron Man.
I don't know why either.
Oh. Well, you do travel a lot.
I do.
Yes.
No, I just got out of a trip to Moscow. I'm actually...
That's right. But we are going to lose you for a couple of shows, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, maybe... No, maybe not. I think I can do Seoul and Sydney. I think I can get up
and just see
my PJs.
Seoul, for sure. You'll have unlimited bandwidth in South Korea. Australia can be this hit and miss sometimes. But, yeah, and it will be the middle of the night. I'm sorry about that.
That's dedication.
Right. Yeah. Also with us, Mr. Mike Elgin, who is on our suggested users list. That's for sure. Suggested host list, Elgin.com. Big user of Google+. And actually, you were a big story this week on Google+, because as you said on Plus, you had been bumped from the suggested users list. I mean, of all people.
Yeah. Well, it all turned out to be a big mistake.
Oh.
I'm back on it. So I've been restored to my unfair position on the recommended list. It's awesome to be on there. But I was off for about 3 days. And
Vic Gundotra put you back. But what did he say?
Why can't we get Leo on?
Well, that's all right. I don't give up. I don't care.
What? he said, it sounds like a mistake to me.
Right.
Let me look into it. He looked into it and fired 20 people, and now I'm back on.
Good.
No, I don't know what happened, but I'm happy to be back on.
And what category are you in on the suggested users list?
I'm in tech, which I guess is better than the categories that Gina and Jeff are in.
And they're in news.
Tech, where I shouldn't be, well, where Gina should be.
Oh, they never fixed that, huh?
No. Hmm. They're still in the opposite categories. Tech is okay. I post a lot of stuff that isn't tech, though. So, but whatever. I mean, I think a lot of people who are interested in tech, you know, start circling me and they get enough tech from me. So
I no longer see there it is. How many people you have in circles. Okay, good. Yes. The number's there.
So yep. This is...
I'm approaching a million, which is pretty cool.
It makes sense that Google do this because, and Twitter does it, Facebook even suggests users to you, because when you first get to a social network, you know, it's kind of unknown. Well, what's going on here? And if you don't follow people on these networks, you see nothing. So they give you categories, starting with featured. Let's see, Ashley Tisdale, Jim Cramer, Cristiano Ronaldo. That's, I imagine these rotate. I don't know.
They kind of do, and very slowly. As you know, it's the same group for like 3 months, and then they get rid of like 12 people and add 25 or something like that.
Yeah.
What it's very controversial on Google Plus, though, because a lot of people aren't very good users. They're just famous movie stars or something. I mean, some of these people never post anything, and they're on the list.
Well, and if anybody should be on this list, it would be you, because you are if posting is important, you are very active. You use this as your sole one and only.
Thing. And I also encourage everybody who's on that list to sort of spread the love around. And I try to,
yes, because with great power comes great responsibility.
Yes. Yeah, like Spider-Man.
Like Spider-Man.
It's a lot like being Spider-Man. But, you know, there's when people first arrive, you know, from Google's interest, they don't want people to sign up and then circle nobody and then just sit there with.
All they hear is crickets.
And this is a good list. It's eclectic, and what Google does, which I think really gives these people a huge advantage, is there's a kind of follow all button.
Yeah, that's what happens.
So when you press that follow, you know, you go, oh, yeah, I definitely want to follow. So I think probably most new users go click, 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 click right down the list. Oh, I'm not interested in music. They might skip. I'm not interested in news. They might skip. And certainly they get to the bottom of the list and they go to technology. And that's important that these people be on there. But Google doesn't say how. I mean, there's a lot of power. They say how you get on this list. Did Vic tell you that?
No, that is completely.
Yeah, because I used to be on it. I feel like, you know, what did I do?
Which is ridiculous. You're the guy who ought to be on it.
You know, I just I don't want to whine. See, you're on tech.
There I am.
But you should be on news. You say
is even though you have, you know, I now have 103 million followers, which is absurd. I'm sure the algorithm does not show all of my stuff to somebody in Thailand, right?
I don't know. Does it?
There's some flow in there because the comments I get are generally from people who are, you know, interested in what I'm interested in and not people saying, would you shut up?
Yeah.
That's what I get. No, I think what I noticed that's funny about being on the list is that, you know, I often see that all these people circling me, it's literally oftentimes thousands per day more, and which is crazy. And then I sort of try to see who they are, and 99% of them are brand new. So these are, you know, a lot of these people are just coming in, clicking that button, and now they're circling me, and they have never posted anything. They've hardly circled
anyone. How many of those
else
are spam beasts, though, you think, Mike?
It's significantly less than 1%, but that's a lot of people. And now that Google is sort of automating the, like, suppressing the spam thing, which I'm not sure is a great idea in the long run. They used to just let the spam comments exist in the comments, and then it was up to the user to go in and delete them. Now they sort of, if anybody flags them, they go into this invisible area where you can go delete them. But nobody goes in there now because they're out of sight, out of mind. So
no, they're still there. I still see them, but
somebody has to flag. Yeah, somebody has to flag them. If nobody flags them,
I'm actually much happier with it this way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. I think in terms of users, Jeff and I are very, very different in terms of the types of things we post. Jeff posts all this, you know, intellectual stuff. You pretty much have to
anger is what I post.
But you have to be pretty well educated and pretty good with English. I post a lot of stuff that's just visual or, you know, just very, very simple, and it plays really well in countries where people aren't speaking English very well. I get on the What's Hot list a lot for that very reason. I think if you post you post a lot of stuff about, you know, obviously journalism and you know, privacy and all those kinds of things, which if you are barely speak English and you live in Madagascar or something like that, you're not going to relate to it as much as, you know, something that's almost purely visual or something that's just
animated,
you know, look at this
gifts.
Amazing yacht. Yeah, exactly. I don't post those, but
I should post more animated GIFs. I think that would get me on the suggested user list.
It might. Cats.
Now, I know cats. I'm not, because I only have 294,000 followers, which is up like 10,000 from 6 months ago or something. And so I think the reason that's important, we talk about this, is, and I'm sure it was important to you, Mike, is a million followers. That's something. Even if, you know, some of them are spam, that's a lot of people. And I think that means anybody who joins Google Plus is very likely to follow you.
Yeah, it's really funny. Sometimes I post things and I get it's hard to believe with so many followers, but sometimes I post things and I get three comments.
Right. I saw somebody analyze what you do, which is I think really interesting. You always have, and I started doing this too because I think this is really cool. You bold the first line; it's a headline basically.
Yes.
And then you do a lot of paragraphing, which makes it easy to understand what you're talking about, and a lot of links. Is that true? And then you always have an image.
That's true. And if you it used to be with the old design, if you shared somebody else's post or just paste in a link and it let it automatically put the little picture in a blurb, then you get this unappealing thing that doesn't get a lot of engagement.
Ah.
But I found that if you just post an original post and then put just a regular old fashioned link in there, put your own picture in there, you get a lot more engagement. It feels like, I don't know, I really don't know what it is. Now, if you reshare a photo, the photo is full size.
I love this.
Yeah. It's nice.
Yeah,
big. Yeah, the full-size photos and videos are really nice.
All right, let's get to the redesign. I'm done bitching. Congratulations on getting back onto the suggested users list, Mike. I'm proud.
You're only going to start bitching now.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. Let's talk about...
Let the bitching begin.
No, you know what? You know what? I don't want to be that guy who hates anything new. And I think I'm pretty proud of myself. I think for an old fart, I tend to like new stuff more, in fact. I'm kind of a fan of the new. So I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to let you guys convince me why the Google Plus redesign is so cool. Gina Trapani.
You know?
It's much better. There are a lot of things I really like about it. First, I really like the way that you can customize it. I like that you can drag items in the left sidebar and hide them if you don't like them. For example, I don't play games on Google Plus, so I just drag that down into the more link, which makes it go away, which is really nice.
Yeah, that is nice.
I like the activity drawer, what they're calling the activity drawer on each post, which is on the bottom right. It's a little arrow that will expand, activity information on the post, you know, who liked it and who shared it and that kind of thing. And it'll replace the comments with that.
Where's that? General, show me that again.
On a post.
I've seen that. I don't see it right now. On the right here, right?
Go to that. I've got his.
Oh,
back.
There it is. Yeah, here, we right. Here we go. Here we go. Here we go. This shows the activity. Yeah.
Yeah, it's calling that the activity drawer. So it flips down and shows you who liked. You can right. replace comments, which is a nice UI to me. I really like white space in general, so I like the way that
you don't mind this column here?
That does look a little weird to me. It was interesting. I hadn't seen that because my browser wasn't full screen. So that is a little strange.
It seems that Google wants you to take your browser, and this is an 11-inch screen, and squeeze. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I say it seems as if Google wants you to squeeze your browser. Wait a minute. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This is stupid. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Yes, Tell me more about why this is great, Gina.
And I also like the way each one of the posts is kind of contained inside of a particular, you know, a box where, hey, I'm saying something. And I just like the layout. I like how the emphasis is on the stream. I really like the profile. If you click on your profile, this is the new thing in the profile is very Facebook-y. You can add a banner image across the top. So click on that profile button.
Facebook-y.
So you can replace those photos. Like mouse over your photos at the top there. If you choose change photos, you can choose just a banner photo across the top.
Well, right. Mine, I have that, Leo. If you go to me.
It gives you a really big profile picture, too.
Okay, so wait a minute. Stop. Go away. Okay. Go to Jeff Jarvis.
I mean, look at that huge, gorgeous picture of you, Leo.
Yeah. I had to change it because it was so ugly. That I realized, oh, now it's going to be big. So now you have this is neat. That's really neat.
I mean, in general, just the big pictures, the big videos, it makes it just a much more compelling media
experience.
Looks a
little bit like, gosh, what does that look like? It seems familiar. I've seen that before somewhere.
It's so ridiculously
trying
light.
To think about where I've seen that. So where they have that big thing going.
That's the most pathetic part, is that it looks exactly like some other service we're trying to remember right now.
Yeah. Oh, Facebook. That's it. Facebook. Now, by the way, this is even more interesting. Now, apparently, this item slides under that until it gets to right. Oh, and then it disappears.
So that's slightly responsive.
Yeah, I guess. Okay.
one of the things that...
What else do we love about this? Tell me all... I do like the fact that I could change these buttons up here. Chris Messina did a fun post. If you go to your circles, you can, by dragging... It's the first three circles, and your circles are the buttons up here. So I decided... Or the first two. So I decided I needed Twit and Friends more than I needed acquaintances, whatever those were. So you just move these around. What are these first two circles you're going to have in the homepage there? That's nice. What else?
The pictures
they're emphasizing Hangouts a lot by putting that constant Hangout on the right and the chatting with. They're trying to increase. They keep trying to push Hangout. Hangout obviously matters a lot to them.
Yeah,
Hangouts has its own page now. If you look on the in the thing called the what are they calling it? They're calling it the.
They want you to video chat with the whole family.
Ribbon. Calling it the ribbon on the left, and so now it's a whole Hangouts page.
It's got its button right here's the Hangouts page. Yeah, and they're. Hangouts to watch, Hangouts to join.
And all those ones that are available to join are ones that you've been invited to. So they're either public or you've been specifically invited.
Right. And they even have a very large banner, which I hope someday I'll be able to close, advertising all the wonderful features. That's a, you know, on an 11-inch screen, that's a third of the screen, this banner, this ad. Is that going to go away?
I'm surprised that there is a don't show me this anymore button there.
Yeah, usually, Facebook usually. Hey, Google, you should go look at Facebook. They usually have a close this button there. I like how they do that.
Leo's salty today.
This is horrible. I am not kidding. This is so retro. These boxes around everything. You think that's good? Look at all the boxiness of it.
They call it a card. And the idea is that there's so much stuff associated with the post. You've got the likes, you've got the buttons for controls. There are third-party browser plugins, and you can have, you know, a dozen of these things that translate the language, do all these things. And those are all contained with the comments in a single container. I like the idea that they're corralled together so it's a single unit that can be passed around and so on.
Right. I do too.
For a service that specializes in something called circles, there are a lot of edges. There are a lot of right angles, which is a little bit visually annoying. But they've really improved the appearance of photographs and videos.
I do like that. They clearly know that photographers love Google Plus, and they want to encourage that. Yeah. So now we've got trending topics always visible, a la Twitter. By the way, one of them. Of course, as usual, Nicki Minaj and Britney Spears are included in the list. They always will be. You just might as well just leave that there. One of them is hashtag whitespace, which shows you that it's kind of it's kind of something people aren't crazy about. I'm not alone, I guess, in my...
I see the whitespace as future-proofing. This is a very future-proofed design.
Apparently, Vic Gundotra says we're going to use this.
Yeah, and they can use, you know, the stuff in the ribbon on the left, that is, you can add an infinite number of stuff to that. There's a lot of places to add more stuff, and you can be sure they will.
So I might be able to drag a piece of something there that I use a lot, or
could be, but they seem to have given themselves a lot more flexibility. But it has to be said, I think one of the totally non-controversial change, the performance is way better.
Is it?
When you used to click to do a new comment, you'd click the mouse pointer in where you're going to add a post, and you used to have to wait, you know, 2 or 3 seconds before it responded and let you start typing. Now it's pretty instantaneous to start a new post.
Mike, I find that when I try to add people they're recommending to me, that's taking forever in that box. So go to where does it suggest people to me? Or you may know, and you click on that thing.
This must be in this white space. I don't have it either. I used to occasionally get stuff like that there. I don't know what's going on.
You think you may know is actually really good. It makes good recommendations.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's the best one out there. I don't see it either.
So top three hated things about it, Leo. Go ahead.
I don't know. I mean, it's an overall feeling. I feel like these boxes
really
just
like
feel very constipated to me, especially given the waste of my screen real estate that they've imposed on me here. It's my opinion, I guess, in general, that Google is very clearly going to start using my screen real estate to promote Google. You know, this is why everybody liked Google.com. Now, all of a sudden, it's full of crap. It's just the beginning. And I think this is the new Google saying, whatever we're on your screen, we're going to be in your face with all of our stuff.
But was the old design good?
It was simple.
Oh, okay.
Look at now. It's trying to get me to install Chrome. It's trying to visit the Google Art Project. It's got this bar up here. That's just Google.com.
The old Google Plus design.
Well, I don't. You're right. I suppose this is more functional, I guess. I don't know. I just you know, maybe it's a response. Maybe it's designed for Chromebooks. Oh, look, I didn't know that, but apparently I changed my profile.
when we were looking at the banner, you had chosen the.
I chose it.
Yeah. So yeah, click on that, and you can go back to your photos.
Oh, I see. You're right. I clicked there. Yeah. Didn't I? Yeah.
I'm gonna leave that. My one big gripe with this is that the comment text doesn't have enough contrast. It's hard to read the comment text.
Yeah, it's not grayed. I don't understand that either.
That was a weird choice.
And bold doesn't really show up very well in the grayed comments. So I used to use bolding as Mike does. It looks great in the initial posts. Let me find.
And the person's name is black, but what they say is gray.
Yeah.
And that seemed a little strange.
Well, those things they can fix, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you see here it's gray.
They tend to.
But I don't think they will fix it, because I think they're trying to create a hierarchy so that the more readable, it's the same, the type is the same size in the post and the comments, but by giving the post a white background, it de-emphasizes what's in the gray background.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's
guessing.
That makes sense, right? So making the comment kind of an addendum to the post. But I think you can do that without making the comment text, you know, difficult to read.
Leo, can I? I have a prepared statement essentially about.
Yes, let's hear your prepared statement.
There've been a lot of discussions about this concept of.
By the way, this Google is a stream. While you talk, I'm just going to show the stream. This is the hashtag uses for white space. What you could do with that white space. That you've got hanging around.
Put your kitten there.
Put your kitten. A lot of people put Facebook there. Oh, Clippy. There you go. Some bacon would be nice. I wouldn't mind that.
I think people should harass Apple.com to fill up all that white space, because it's so horrible, all that wasted space.
Yeah, but that's, you know what? There's a difference, isn't there, between this and Apple.com?
The Apple.com.
They want me to use this. Apple.com is an ad for Apple. Google wants me to use this, right?
Right. I mean, I'm a big fan of white space. And one of the things I hate about Facebook is there isn't any. And so you're just hammered by this cacophony of visual noise. And I can't stand to look at it. It's like, it's just way too
much.
That's a good
point.
There's stuff like, remember the controversy of the hidden messages where, you know, if Facebook decided it might be spam, it put it in this folder. It was right there in the left nav bar. This just click it and you would see the stuff, but nobody ever did. Nobody ever paid attention, because there's so much stuff in the left
nav.
There
is a lot going on, isn't there? Yeah.
And it's just too much. And I kind of like the white space. But back to the idea of all these different features being foisted upon the user. It seems clear to me. And in fact, Google has actually announced this explicitly, that what they're doing right now is they are reversing course in terms of being a company that has, here's a product, there's a product. They have nothing to do with each other. First, long ago, they unified the passwords. And then eventually unified the privacy policies. And now everything is showing up everywhere. What they're doing is they're taking different products and they're turning them into features of a single product. They want you to be a Google user.
Right.
And here are all the things. And if you think about it, if you look at Facebook, nobody complains that Messages is being forced on you if you're a user of Facebook. You think, well, that's just a feature of Facebook. So Google's doing something unusual in that they're starting with a bunch of products and they're moving to a unified product. But, I mean, look at Apple. Everybody loves Apple because it's all just, you know, if you use the iPhone, you're also using iTunes, you're using all these other things. Nobody complains about it because it was like that from the beginning. So I really think that people should take what Google said more seriously in terms of genuinely unifying disparate products into a single product. And I think they're doing it for survival because they found that there's so much stuff going on out there for Google to just have all these disconnected things isn't really serving their mission.
But I'll agree with Leo here that I don't disagree with unification. I do think that if they did it with better designers and a better aesthetic sense and a better sense of use, that would be a good thing.
Yeah.
And they're up against tough competition. I'm not saying Facebook is gorgeous or Twitter is gorgeous, but Apple is. Mm-hmm. And I think that Google could be a lot prettier than it is. And the white space, I like white space, but white space, because we didn't know what to put in it, is not white space. It's a mistake.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's probably fixable. I mean, you're right. I think that, what do they call it? The bar, the toolbar on the left?
Ribbon.
That's a Microsoft word.
Microsoft.
Yeah. The ribbon makes a lot of sense. The fact that it's customizable is fantastic. That's exactly what you want. I think there's potential here. It feels simultaneously cluttered and a wasted and wasted space. Yeah. It's a bizarre.
I think it's better. I think it's got some elegant, you know, things about it, like the ribbon, but I think that it's not art.
And Jason Calacanis suggests putting Twitter in the white space. I think that's what I'll do.
But I do think that it's an interesting change for Google, because recently they've been a design-driven company. Whether you like this design or not, it's a design.
It is a design.
Their websites used to basically be design-free.
Yeah.
And now they're actually designing things and using design as a strategic advantage they're attempting it. And that's a very big change. And that's another way they're unifying their products is through design.
Let me show you one other thing that I think is probably an unintended consequence. I often increase the font sizes on my pages because I'm an old man and this is a fairly fine font. I'm going to just notch it up one. And that's the result. Notch it up two. I mean, now it's certainly legible.
It's bad CSS.
But boy, it's not what I would call responding probably in an intelligent way. That if you really like this chat bar, they disappear at the drop of a hat.
No, you know, the truth is I don't like the chat bar, and so I'd like to get rid of the chat bar.
Well, give me maybe
I never chat with anybody.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't want that there.
I want the option to get rid of that.
And I don't. And the truth is, I don't use Hangouts, and so much space is dedicated to getting me to use a Hangout. I feel a little put upon. But here it is: the you might like thing. So these are the things you might want to add.
If you click over, if you mouse over the you might like, you will see on the right. No, mouse over the top line, and you'll see it go to a full page of them.
Oh
no,
no, maybe that's different from people you should follow.
You may know.
Yeah,
you may know.
Yeah, that's another one. I mean, I think that it's not the end of the world, obviously.
Well, you were just dissing Google Plus last week anyway, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're trying to keep this fresh and interesting and useful. I think they've deprecated the content and they've upticked their promotion. And I think that is not the direction I would want it to go.
More than it was already on Google Plus. I mean, they already had Hangouts there and trying to get you to join people and all that stuff.
Is it my imagination or is the content, the posts aren't, it's a smaller portion of the page, it feels like.
But they're emphasizing media in ways that they weren't before.
Right.
I mean, the images are much bigger.
I do like
that.
That's
a good, that's a good choice.
Like
I mean,
And video too,
yeah.
And this is how a Hangout is now displayed, which I think is nicely done.
And, I feel a little put upon by Hangouts as well because I don't use it as much as I thought that I would. But Hangouts is the one big differentiating feature for Google Plus,
right.
And it's a really cool feature. I think that a lot of people really like it, so it makes sense that they would say, that they would promote
it. Right.
I think all of the tech giants have discovered that the key to mega success is the ability to change user behavior at scale. And this whole design and even the previous design is designed to get you to change your behavior. They're trying to move the world from a non-Hangout using world to a Hangout using world.
I kind of resent that.
Instead, it's different for Google. Google used to be like, you know, here's our stuff, do whatever you want. And now they're kind of like, here's what you should be doing.
Right.
So, you know, but it works for Apple, that's for sure. Apple's really masterful at changing user behavior. And that's the key to their success.
That's maybe a little disappointing for me because I always thought of Google as the anti-Apple, right? The alternative, maybe, in some ways. And if they're just going to be just like Apple, well, what have we gained? Where, you know, they're the alternative to Facebook, too, for many of us.
Yeah, it is interesting to see these companies kind of move toward one another, right? Yeah. I mean, one of our big gripes with Facebook is that it's this closed, unified space that you have to sign in to get content, right? And Google was the opposite of that. It was open. It was public. You didn't have to be signed in. Everything, you know, was... And now Google's moving toward being more unified. And I think Facebook would benefit from being a little more open. And we're seeing a similar kind of thing with Apple and Google, right? I mean, Larry Page talks about his discussions with Steve Jobs. And I know those are driving this unification and this emphasis on a clean, simple, beautiful interface, which he talked about in his year-end memo, which I think came out after our episode last week.
Yes, we should talk about that. It did.
Yeah. So it's just interesting to see these companies recognize, you know, in the face of their own strengths, recognize their weaknesses and try to kind of move toward, you know, the other's strategy. But when you do things kind of half-assed, sometimes you get products that are, you know, don't quite make it.
What's the most beautiful Google product?
Well, it's the Circles editor in Google Plus.
That's pretty cool. That's the Andy Hertzfeld thing. I'd love to hear from some designers, and maybe there's some designers in the chat room or somewhere who could talk to us. But I'd love to hear from some designers about what they think about this. It doesn't. I can't articulate it, but it feels to me a little framed and claustrophobic and like escape proof.
But when you compare it to Facebook, like Leo, when you were switching between
Facebook's
those two tabs,
Facebook's a horrible design.
Yeah, I think Paul Ford said it's like a police van crashing into an IKEA continuously.
Yeah, but everybody agrees on that. It's, you know, we all know that it's a horrible design.
Right. I mean, I know you don't agree with me, Leo, but I would say right now Google Plus is the most beautiful product that Google has. Yeah.
All right. Well, you have better taste than I do.
I don't. I'm not a designer, and you should. But you should get a real designer on to discuss these things.
Roro says, and this is true. He says it's left justified. That's one of the reasons you don't like it. It is left justified.
It is left justified,
which is kind of nowadays. I don't think necessary, but okay.
Well, let me ask another question. What's the most? Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, I've been using a new to-do list called Apigo To-Do, and it's a really interesting design thing that they did, and I would love for Google to sort of copy this approach. It's a to-do list that has separate apps for the desktop, for the iPad, and for the iPhone. And each of those apps is completely different from each other. They look like they were designed by entirely different companies. The desktop app looks like a desktop app. It kind of looks like a Windows app rather than a Mac application. The phone app looks very like iPhone-y. And the iPad app is just an entirely, purely iPad creature. Now, they make you pay for each one of these individually, and it's not that cheap. The lot costs you like $35 or something like that for a to-do app that's a little bit of money. But I would love to see I would love this new design, which I do love anyway, but I would love it even more if they came out with an iPad app for Google Plus, which now doesn't exist right now. You have to use the iPhone version. That is a really tablet-y version that's completely different from this. No corrals. Free-flowing. I would love to see them do that because I think this makes a certain amount of sense for, you know, they're shooting for hundreds of millions of desktops. But a tablet version, if it was completely different from this, would be fantastic.
Here was one of the complaints from a Thailand Google Plus user. Yes, I like the choice. And he comes, obviously, to look at your stuff. Isria Parit. He says, the problem is here on my 1280 by 800 screen.
Well said.
Content consumes 26.9%, and the rest is essentially wasted.
That's a good point. That's well said.
If your browser is open up that far. I personally, and this is, you know, I'm not an average user in this case. I think a lot of people go full screen on this stuff. I have two Google Plus windows open at all times, and then I have a third window for the most part. And it actually works better for that, because if you crunch down the browser window size, it actually crunches down into a smaller thing where the content takes up 90%.
Yeah, but you are unusual in that way.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But hey, I love it. And so it's the point is that it's designed to be right-sized. So if you go all the way out, they keep adding more junk to it with the, you know, I shouldn't call it junk, but like the chat list and all that stuff. And if you shrink it back down.
But they should optimize for the user for full size. And what they did was they optimized for Google for full size.
Well, what they should do is they should be responsive design and use. We know how to do this, folks.
Yeah.
They should use the screen however big or small I want to make it. They should use it appropriately.
No doubt they have the numbers on, you know, what the average screen size of most users is.
Well, I'm glad I'm not. I guess I'm not average, right? So
yeah, you do have a lot of white space there, though, Leo.
This is an 11-inch screen. This is a tiny screen. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back with more. I'm done bitching. I apologize. I really hate it when something changes, inevitably everybody says, horrible, horrible. I've gone through that. You know, every time we change something on Twitter, we get that. And so I understand. But there's something wrong with it that bugs me, and I can't quite place it. And I'm not alone, but maybe I'm just joining the chorus of people who say, it changed it. So... And it's true that Facebook is hideous. I mean, there's no question about it. Others do it worse. I was hoping Google would do it better. We're going to take a break. Come back with more. Gina Trapani, Mike Elgin, Jeff Jarvis, brought to you today by Stamps.com. I'll tell you what else I hate. Waiting in line at the post office. But who likes that? Who likes that? Oh, maybe you like to socialize there, right? Now that they got a new stamp coming out, right? They're closing post offices. I could tell you those lines are going to get longer and longer. Parking is tougher and tougher. Wouldn't you like to bring the post office to your desk? You can do everything you do at the post office right now, right here, with your own computer and your own printer with stamps.com. Mac or PC, you print the postage you need, always exactly the right postage. In fact, they've got, and they offer for free, a USB scale that will exactly weigh your packages or your letters and give you always the right postage. They have discounts the post office does not offer, up to 21% on express mail, up to 15% on priority mail. Because it's a computer, it's smart, it does things like, you know, it can use your address book from QuickBooks for filling out invoices. It can, if you're doing international mail orders, it does international. And we'll fill out the forms and everything. And the best part is you never have to take that now to the post office. Your mail carrier, who comes every day, will pick it up. Or you can even call and schedule a free pickup. The post office loves Stamps.com because it's offloading them. And that's why you should try it. I want you to go to Stamps.com. When you do go to Stamps.com, you're going to see initially an $80 special offer. Don't go for that. Click that microphone in the upper right-hand corner. I consider that my microphone. And you'll get my offer, which is a $110 bonus offer. It includes $55 of free postage. We'll give you more free postage when you do it this way. $55 free postage and the scale and a supplies kit and a four-week trial. And all you have to do is pay shipping and handling on the scale. It's really great. You're going to love this. Stamps.com. Click the microphone. And then enter the offer code TWIG. And you will get this $110 bonus value. Stamps.com, the offer code is TWIG. It's really, I've been using them since the turn of the century. This is around 2000, I want to say 2003, 2004. And it's just great. All right, we're going to move along. There are many other things we could talk about. The Google Plus one, you know why it hit me hard is because it's my homepage. That's how much I love Google Plus, even though they don't like me. I like them, and it's my homepage. And so it's funny when your homepage is so dramatically changed. I opened it while we were doing security now, and I literally, it's on tape. I gasped. I went, what happened? What? So maybe I just have to get used to it. That's all. Instagram, we haven't talked about that since we convened last week. Are we in a bubble? $1 billion. Jeff Jarvis, why would Facebook pay $1 billion for an iPhone app, basically?
They've got it.
They got the money.
The arguments are many. The arguments are many that they needed mobile. They needed better photo. that they needed the audience, that they were scared of it because they see themselves, Facebook sees itself, I think perhaps too much as a photo service, but so much of their usage is photo, right. and Instagram is better. As someone said in one of the clips I think today, you know, $1 billion for crappy filters. You know, I'm not an Instagram, you know, fanatic at all. I hardly use it ever.
I love Instagram. And I used it a lot. When it first came out, I was a big early supporter of Instagram.
And that's what they purchased for $1 billion. They purchased your
30 million me's.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And I just wrote a column about this, which is going to go live any second now. There are basically three things that Facebook got out of this that they didn't already have. I mean, don't tell me about users, because most Instagram users also use Facebook, and it's only 35 million people versus 800, 900 million. Right. So they didn't buy users. They didn't really buy technology. There's no technology in Instagram that's worth a damn. Really, I mean, I don't mean to
steal it all.
It's pretty good design, but it's a free app with cheesy filters that's really easy to use and clean. But people love it.
Right.
They love Instagram, and people don't love Facebook. People love to use Facebook because the people that they love are on Facebook. But you'll never hear the phrase Facebook fanboy.
Right.
Nobody's a fan of Facebook.
No, that's true.
And big companies can't engineer affection unless you're Apple. I think this is the beginning of a trend where companies will be purchased and highly valued because they've been able to engender super high user affinity. And that's what Instagram is. They're buying the love of, they're not only buying the love of 30, 35 million people, but they're buying the ability to be lovable. And I think a lot of the Instagram pixie dust is going to end up in their mobile apps. And the hope is that it will make people love Facebook more.
So they're buying a soul. This is from Paul's New Yorker piece. He said that basically Facebook is buying soul. The soul of a startup, a thing that people just love.
Can you really buy that, though? Don't you kill it when you buy it?
That's a good question, Leo. I tend to think no. I mean, I saw a lot of people write a lot of pieces about how to export all your photos from Instagram and close your account once they heard about, you know, the Facebook acquisition.
But you know what, Gina? That's what got me pissed off. Mm-hmm. There's this digisnob movement that as soon as Facebook touches it, well, I'm going to kill it.
Right.
You know, 845 million people against you. I mean, how out of touch are you with what's going on? How uncurious are you about what, you know, the world is using? Kill it. I don't care. But to make this announcement that I'm going to unsubscribe to you, or I'm going to kill this account, or I'm going to do that, I don't care. The business is still growing. It doesn't, frankly, need you. If there's too many of you, that's true. But this idea that Facebook has cooties, I think it's kind of ridiculous. Facebook may well ruin it. You know, everything that AOL bought, everything that Yahoo bought got ruined. But Zuckerberg does do things differently. And he said in his message, it was very important, that he plans to keep this running independently. He still wants it to be part of an ability in the ecosystem to send to other services. I don't think this is the creation of a unified social network. I think it's the creation of the first social conglomerate.
Well, you know, note that he said that he would keep it running separately, but he didn't say that we're not going to make Facebook more like this also.
That's okay.
But back to the point, I think that you can actually purchase love like this, because the reason people love Instagram is because of how it makes them feel. Instagram, people love their lives. They love their cat, their friends. They see a sunset. They're inspired by it. They want to share it. It's a human impulse to want to share the things that you're inspired by. And Instagram lets you go snap, make it a little arty. So I feel like I'm being expressive and creative, even though I'm not.
Right.
And then click a button and everybody sees it.
Yeah, Mike.
It feels really good to people.
But okay. But I think that love is hard to earn and easy to lose. And and I don't say that because of the cootie aspect. Oh, Facebook touched it. But look at Flickr. I think people love Flickr. Yahoo bought it. I still use Flickr. I use Flickr a lot. But Yahoo abandoned it. So my love for Yahoo was diminished. Not that I ever had any possible respect I had for Yahoo, put it that way, was diminished by their abandonment of Flickr. And Delicious, worse.
Right.
So you can't buy it. You can at most borrow it.
Yeah. The other thing I think that I haven't heard very many people mention is that one reason to purchase Instagram is to prevent them from supporting Google Plus. Because right now it supports everything but Google Plus, like a lot of things.
So buy them before there's a right API.
Exactly. And
yeah.
So,
because you know, I mean, when you take a picture here, we'll do this real quickly. We'll take a picture of Gina because I think that's the best thing to take a picture of.
Aww.
And then I will make it arty.
I read somebody say that, you know, these filters make everything look like it was taken in the 70s.
Right. And now I can share
as
Twitter, Facebook, email, Flickr, Foursquare, Tumblr, Posterous.
Everything but.
Where's the Google? Where's the Google? Yeah. And for a couple of things come to mind. First of all, I don't think that the naysayers are really important. I mean, after all, when there was an Android version of Instagram, it was probably the same people who said, "Ew, you got Android in my iPhone." So those people are probably just, you know, they're not going to make a big difference. But I wonder, can you inject, you know, when they're making biogenetically enhanced products, they inject DNA. Can you inject DNA from Instagram into Facebook? Or I think Facebook's a juggernaut. I think there's only 30 people work at this, or 20 people that work at this company. How is that going to change the monster that is Facebook?
Well, to your point, how did the acquisition of FriendFeed change Facebook?
It didn't.
I mean, does anybody remember FriendFeed?
Yeah.
It was like it was the flavor of the month, and then Facebook bought it and
right.
just kind
and
of.
Brett Taylor,
crashed.
who came from FriendFeed, became Facebook's CTO.
Yeah.
Whoa. Wasn't FriendFeed bought? I thought FriendFeed was bought. FriendFeed was the Walking Dead at that point.
Yeah, they were bought for the people. And this is, in fact, up till now, everything Facebook's done is an acquire.
Right.
That doesn't work in audio. It only works when you write it. AQUHIRE, where they would get, I'm thinking of Sam Lesson of Dropio, which was a great product. And they killed it because all they really wanted was Sam. FriendFeed was a dying product, but they really just wanted Paul and Mike. Obviously, they mostly want Brett. This is going to be different, I think.
I think this is more like Maps, isn't it? I mean, this is more like Google buying the folks who made
and making it a big part of Facebook.
Because you look what they did with Sam. So I think Sam's a good example, right? So by hiring Sam, by buying his company, he became key to
He did Timeline.
And the best thing that can happen here is that, yes, Instagram can exist on its own, but I think you're right, Mike. The point is that Facebook becomes more like Instagram rather than Instagram becomes like Facebook.
Those 20 people, and it's really not 20, it's really probably Kevin Systerman, nobody else, if he can go in, I guess Sam did, Brett
Sam
did. I guess
open
you're
to
right.
That kind of culture. Yeah. And they hired those other guys who were involved in Timeline. You know, they went and hired the brightest they could. I think that's part of what Zuckerberg tries to do. He walks them through the woods to convince them to come there because it's part of, you know, kind of the cult of Zuck. And I think that means something. That's part of what they pride themselves on Facebook is that they're not the behemoth that Google has become.
Cult or not, if anybody offered me $1 billion for anything, including my firstborn, I think I'd really consider it anyway.
Cleared 3 days before this announcement, who got a piece of that $1 billion, who doubled their money in 3 days.
Yeah.
That's what's really absurd.
Yeah.
Through the lottery, man.
You just got to know where you're investing. That's all. Systrom, the founder, got $400 million. The investors, of course, made out like bandits. And in fact, they had a $100 million pool that's divided among the remaining employees. So each of them is going to be a millionaire. This is
the thing about the acquisition announcement that made me kind of crazy. Or this is the thing that fascinated me or maybe galled me a little bit is, you know, it's like 20-year-old guy gets a $1 billion exit. It has such a huge impact on the technology community, the tech media, and then I think the startup community, because suddenly the whole conversation becomes about
how can I get
my
billion?
Had the most spectacular exit. Right. There's all this like weird jealousy, and there's kind of the Facebook backlash, and then, you know, I just think you have a lot of young people who are trying to make good products on the web, which is what we're all supposed to be trying to do, not trying to have the most spectacular $1 billion exit possible. Kind of get distracted.
It is distracting. You
know? Gina, I think you're way right. I think you're way right. And I think that this creates a 1% of the technology world.
Yes, it does.
And, right? And that's part of the problem where we are now. And it skews the ethical view. If it skewed banking, it's going to skew geeks too. And it's worrisome that that's where we are. Now, I don't begrudge them getting the money they can get. God bless them. But yeah. You're right. What does it do to the rest of the world around them?
You know, there's this very small contingent of young men, young white men who have a lot of money because they had, you know, they won this lottery. And, you know, and like you said, good for them. It makes me sad that the conversation about web product development, you know, becomes about the exit and not about, you know, making something really good. And I think Instagram.
This has been going on since 1994 and Netscape. Absolutely. I mean, this is frankly always the undercurrent in Silicon Valley are you going to make the big score?
I like this trend because essentially years ago, if you were a young entrepreneur, you wanted to go for that big payoff either by becoming a company with a lot of revenue or by selling to a larger company. That's always been the case. But in the past, you had to always demonstrate, well, not in the past, since the crash of 2000, you had to demonstrate that you had a business plan. This is the revenue model. This is how we can make money. And these guys never got around to that part of it. They just created
a
free app that everybody loved. And I would love to see everybody focused on creating things that everybody loves and stop trying to figure out how we can.
With you, Mike. I think sustainability matters. I see that disease in journalism and news and media where people say, I just want to do what's cool and neat, and they don't put any thought into sustainability. And so then what happens, this is where the true bubble comes in. Then they say, well, okay, I'll get bought. They don't give any thought to it, which is really just a bad way to create a feature. There's no real, you know. Well,
but isn't that what it is?
Yeah, it is. But here's the issue. What we should be critical of is not the makers of, I think, Instagram. We should be critical of Facebook.
Right.
That they have a structure that meant that rather than developing something cool and nice in-house, they had to go buy for $1 billion. Something wrong there. The other thing is, I really want to go back to what Gina said, because I think it's important that we have to look at the future financial structure of our world. And I've argued, and I argue this in a post about the jobs bill, not jobs, but J-O-B-S, the investment, which I'll talk about in a second, that we're moving from a world of vertical industries fully owned where you control product creation, manufacturing, marketing, and distribution to a world of ecosystems. And the ecosystems, I say that there are three layers. There's a platform layer. There's an entrepreneurial layer now made possible by the platform labor existing. And there's a network layer that is often necessary to get those small entrepreneurial ventures to critical mass. Okay? What's happening in our world today is all the value is falling to the platform. That's why Google is worth so much and Facebook and so on and Zynga. The entrepreneurial layer is possible to do because those platforms exist, but you're small. You're inevitably small until maybe you get in a network like GLAMP. What I like about the jobs bill, apart from taking away regulation that we probably still do need on companies because companies and Wall Street are all screwed up, but the idea of being able to get funding to new ventures on their own now easier than going through venture capital from crowdfunding, and the idea of being able to exit without having to sell out for $1 billion or go IPO, and you can get earlier exits and get some value out of this, I hope drives some value back up to the entrepreneurial layer, which is the one that Gina really loves and I love and that we want to encourage. If the only way we encourage that is the absolute long shot blockbuster economy, it becomes like Hollywood. A few people will make the movie that succeeds and the rest will starve.
Okay, Instagram did it. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Jeff. Instagram did everything right. And it's great that they're being rewarded. They had a very lean operation. No, I understand that.
Gina, right? You're not criticizing them. You're criticizing the structure that this is leading to.
But the $1 billion, the unusual $1 billion purchase price, the radically unexpected, is a reward for having done everything right. If this had never happened, Instagram would have still been very, very successful. There's 10 ways they could have been very successful.
Yeah, but I don't think that's the only gauge. You can also be Mark Cuban, who basically did nothing and got a huge amount of money from a very stupid company that in turn then turned around what they bought for $5 billion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fact that you got a lot of money is not necessarily the reward of quality. What Gina, I think, is going to, and I want to hear back from Gina, is that I think that there's an ethic that you want to see rewarded, right, Gina?
Yes.
And it's got to be more than just, I made something nice. It's got to be that I can have a sustainable business out of this. I can raise funds to do it. I can take some money off the table to buy my house. I can make something good and be good and have a business. And we want lots of that happening rather than a few blockbusters. Gina, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I my last trip to New York, I visited a startup. I won't say which one, but it's been in business for almost 10 years. It's profitable, doing great. And the founder said to me, you know, I feel just so old and slow. Like when you look at things like Zynga, and I bet now, you know, OMG Pop, and I bet now he'd say Instagram. And it was like, wait a second, 10 years in business, you know, with a profitable internet business, media company on the internet, that's something to be proud of. That's something to celebrate. I only hope that, you know, 10 years, my company will still be around and I'll still be passionate about it and I'll still be doing meaningful, interesting things on the web and I will have made something that people love. Yes. You know, I listen, Instagram's an awesome app. I loved it. They made an incredible product experience. Those guys did a great job and good for them and their $1 billion. It makes me sad that it kind of sets up this goal or this standard, you know, that people are like, well, if I don't build this blockbuster product in 2 years, by the time I'm 26 and sell out for $1 billion, then I failed.
Well, they should. Good. Listen to Gina, entrepreneurs. You haven't failed.
Yeah.
Well, you haven't failed. You built something good. And you know what? Most people, like 99.9%, will never have a big payday like Kevin Systrom had. This is really an outlier.
That's the goal, Leo. That's the problem.
It can be the goal. And you know why it's good? Because what it does is it gets everybody on Page Mill Road to start putting money into lots of little startups.
But that's... That's part
That's
of the
not
issue
why it's
is,
good.
Is that they expect that kind of their definition of failure is not
they,
the definition.
They know that it's a long shot, but it means there's more money to invest because there's more money to be made. Most entrepreneurs are like me, where I'm just going to be happy if I could survive a year or two and make a profitable business. That's the way most people think. I don't think it's going to change how people feel.
I'm going to go wonky for a second. I read a great book I just blogged about called The Institutional Revolution. It's pretty wonky. No Gutenberg in it. But it tries, from an economics perspective, to explain why there were these ridiculous institutions in pre-modern England of the aristocracy and bought army commissions and dueling and private roads.
Right.
And it, really interesting analysis that said before you could measure performance, you had to get trust in other means. You got means in things like he calls a hostage capital. You sent your daughter to the court, and if you screwed up, you couldn't see her again. You bought a huge, you made a huge estate because you invested in that. Point is, then other means came along to measure. People could find longitude and latitude. We had clocks that worked. We had measurements. You could measure success in new ways. And so the institutions changed. What Gina is talking about here really, I think, is that we are creating the new institutions of society. The technology industry is creating new institutions and how they operate and under what ethics and mores and with what goals. And we have to stand back and say, if $1 billion becomes the goal, again, God bless Facebook and God bless Instagram. Not complaining about them. But what are we building? What's the society
we want to build a society where all of the above is celebrated and possible and common. And in fact, that's exactly what we have. Lots and lots of small entrepreneurs in technology are building companies and making going concerns of it and doing very well. And it's fantastic. The thing that excites me about these big, splashy $1 billion payoffs is it's something that inspires high school students to want to become entrepreneurs. Starting a little company and making a nice profit off in the corner doing something is awesome. And
there's
something
few,
that everybody should try to do.
That's like saying,
it doesn't
Mike,
matter if there's few. How many?
It's the lottery. People buy lottery tickets. Who bought Mega Millions tickets? Everybody, even my smart employees.
Which is a terrible.
I agree. But look, I think both entrepreneurs and investors know that this is an outlier. It's the outlier that makes people feel good and say, "Gee, we could buy it." You know, like win the lottery ticket. And I don't see any real harm done here.
You're making the basketball in the ghetto argument, which is that very few can make the pro teams, but if many hope to, then it's good.
Well, in fact, the reality is that a lot of young people think the only way to make it in the world that they either have to become a superstar singer, rap singer, or Beyonce, or something like that, or they have to become a major sports person, or they have to be famous, or nothing.
It doesn't but we're dealing with a smart class of people. Wait a minute. The tech community is smart. They're not stupid. They know that this is an outlier. They're not. They understand what Gina's saying. You should build a company. You should build value. You should do. You're giving them no credit. They're not. They're smart. They know this isn't. They're not going to get $1 billion. That might happen. It gives them a little hope, a little something to dream about. But almost everybody who starts a company, I would guarantee you, is just trying to make something good. And make something that can last, make something profitable. Yes, we all think about our big exit, but that doesn't change how you do things, does it? I mean, I think you still try to add value.
I hope so. I hope that young entrepreneurs are not aiming for the hockey stick, big exit, you know, crazy. I hope that people want to build businesses that last. I just think that stories like this, they get the amount of hype that they do. And, you know, it's $1 billion. It's a big number. I understand. I'm not blaming the media. It seemed like a really big distraction. I mean, at one point I had to close Twitter because I just couldn't, you know, the joking, the snarking, the commentary, the opinions, right.
It gets a lot of attention. By the way, if it had been 900, million, it wouldn't have gotten that much of attention.
It would not.
It's 1 billion that makes such a big deal.
It is. And you know, and my fantasy, and I have no idea how this actually happened, but my fantasy is this, that Facebook went to Instagram and said, okay, we want to buy you for this much. And Instagram said, no way. And they said, we want to buy you for this much. And Instagram said, no way. You cannot afford us. We care about our product too much. Yeah. And it got up to $1 billion, right? Like everybody has their price. And it makes you really happy that Instagram's price is $1 billion. That's great.
I think that's exactly what happened.
That's the price for selling.
You think that's what happened?
Yes.
That makes me happy.
Because
right?
they, you know, their last round, they were valued at $100 million. Some wild, crazy people a few months ago said $500 million.
It's based on the last round, I think. I think the last round was valued at that.
It's clearly more than you would normally. You're not going to say, I'll take $1 billion. You might say it in jest. And then when Mark Zuckerberg says, okay.
Okay. And who's going to go home then and say, honey, I'm proud of myself. I turned down $1 billion today. What? Yeah. To the moon.
That's grounds for divorce.
And now I'm going to get Jeff wired up, round up here, because it's at $1 billion, it's worth $50 million more than the New York Times.
Yes.
The New York Times market cap is $950 million.
A 551-day-old company is worth more than
who has more users?
No, you're right. 30 million is more than whatever, than 1 or 2 million that read the New York Times. I would argue.
No, they have a large online audience.
That's true. Online's bigger.
They actually do have, they probably have more than 30 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know what we don't know? This could be a broadcast.com moment. We could be watching Kevin Systrom and the port, you know, jumping onto the floor at the Portland Trailblazers game, making an ass of himself, spending his money like Mark Cuban in 10 years, and everybody will go, remember when Facebook bought, what was the name of his company for like all that money? Whatever happened to that? Okay. No, I'm talking about Instagram. I'm saying 10 years from now.
Oh, right.
Remember Facebook bought, what was that? It was a fellow thing.
He'll be on Dancing with the Stars.
I'll tell you who's really feeling bad right now. Do you remember a company called Text America? It was a moblogging company. Had a lot of attention about eight years ago. We were all doing it. We were all taking pictures on our cell phones and putting them on text. It was Instagram. It just was a little too early, and they couldn't make it.
How do you think Hipstamatic feels?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Well, a lot of this is timing, right? Timing, connections. I mean, it's talent, but then there's a lot of other factors.
But they tried to monetize.
Right. That was their mistake. Yeah. So,
No.
Too early. Nothing wrong with monetization, but they clearly
build quality first. Worry about monetization later. Yeah. That's actually okay, Gina, because that fits your model. Because they're not trying to say let's make money right away. Let's build a great product first. Let's build a great community first.
Okay.
As long as we can survive, let's build a great community.
And they were frugal about it. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's underappreciated.
For a long time, Instagram was just those two guys. Yeah. I remember we interviewed him. We interviewed Kevin. And we said, where's the Android product? This was a year ago. And he said, it's just the two of us. You know, we don't have time.
Yeah.
It's just two of us.
Well, my son, Jake thought that actually among some of his friends, my son Jake, that people were upset about the Android coming out because part of the allure of Instagram was that you had to have an iPhone.
Right.
to have it, and that was part of what made it limited and special.
That's why it was sexy.
Yeah.
So, Paddy Power, who is apparently a very well-known Irish bookie, is taking odds on Facebook's next acquisition, and Foursquare is leading with 4-1 odds. The long odds, MySpace, YouTube is 40-1. Friends Reunited, it's an English, you know.
That's English.
Yeah, so same thing with a couple
of
these.
That's their classmates.com.
Yeah. Tumblr, 25-1. Spotify, 7-1. I think Spotify should be higher.
I disagree with Evernote being on that list. I don't think they're going to go for Evernote.
92
yeah,
for Evernote.
I agree.
Hey, Jeff, tell us the name of that book because you just held it up so people on video saw it, but we didn't hear it.
Sorry. It's called The Institutional Revolution by Douglas Allen. It's pretty wonky, folks.
Gutenberg. Do you know of any good Gutenberg books?
Yeah, what would be a good book about Gutenberg?
The best Gutenberg, the authoritative one that's out of print is by Albert Kapper, K-A-P-R.
You tried, Mike. Did your best.
Oh.
It's called Gutenberg the Geek, and it's only 99 cents.
Yes, 99 cents.
You tried, Mike.
I walked out. But while we're at it, if you're really into Gutenberg, after having read my thing, you want to read something really good, John Mann's Gutenberg biography is very good.
I will read that. I will read that. I love it.
Facebook is never going to
touche.
No, this is why we love Jeff. Well, actually, the best Gutenberg book would be. I'm glad you asked.
All right, busted.
The only people I want on Twitter, on any of our shows, are people like that. They know nothing about promotion or marketing.
Jokes.
Yeah, we just want to inform. That's all. We're just here.
Santa
to
Claus, go to Gimbel's.
Okay.
Exactly. I want to tell you about Squarespace.com, the secret behind exceptional websites. If you go to Squarespace.com, here's a perfect example. Squarespace could make this so much harder. They could say, give me a credit card number and, in 2 weeks. But no, if you want to try Squarespace, all you do is go to squarespace.com, click a big green button that says try it free. You don't need a credit card. You need your first name, your last name, an email address, the name of your site, and your password. And for the next 2 weeks, you get the whole thing, everything Squarespace does. And I'm telling you, this is great. So it's hosting, of course, the best hosting out there. Really is the best. People always ask me, what's the best hosting? But the thing is, it's tied to the software, and there's an advantage to that. For instance, it's always up to date, always secure. They take care of that for you. Fully manage your server. You don't have to worry about it. And then you create a website on top of it using their incredible software. The templates, they've just added 13 new template redesigns. 85 new style options. They've got two brand new templates, and the templates are gorgeous. But what's great is they're just the starting point, because as soon as you pick a template, you start dragging and dropping and adding and changing fonts. And did I mention fonts? Over 300 fonts available through the Google font library. If you are super sophisticated and you want to do CSS, of course you can, but you don't have to. But you will like the fact that they have a built-in IDE, a CSS editor, that colors the code and gives you everything you need, including undo, redo, insert style variables. It's really sweet. And they have three color themes available for editing, so you can choose the color you want. I mean, they theme their editor. How about that? But you don't have to. I hesitate mentioning that because I don't want people to go, CSS, what? You don't have to use that. In fact, if you go on the example sites and take a look at the various sites that are built with Squarespace, 90% of these, no customization. They're straight out of the box. But the beauty of this is they all look different. And, for e-commerce, for photographers, for portfolios, for artists, you cannot bring a Squarespace site down. The best hosting, the best software, the best stuff, free. Just go to squarespace.com, click the green button. If you decide you want to buy, let me show you this because they've updated the pricing. It's new, and I think it's very simplified, very streamlined. There's basically two prices. $8 is the standard, $8 a month, billed annually. $16 a month for the unlimited, billed annually. And they also have month-to-month plans if you just want to go month-to-month. I do suggest the annual plan because I'm going to give you an offer code that will give you 10% off. So if you get the annual plan, you'll save a lot of money. TWIG4, T-W-I-G and the number 4, gives you 10% off your first purchase on a new account. Squarespace is fantastic. Highly recommend it. Give it a try today. We know you will like it. Mike Elgin is here of Elgin.com. That's really just a link to his Google Plus page.
That's right. All Google Plus, all the time, most of the time.
Yeah.
Mike, were you nervous when you heard there was going to be a big redesign? Since you are so tied into Google Plus, was there any little tiny bit of you that's nervous and says, oh, I hope they don't ruin it? It's my life.
I feel that there's so many sort of beta rough edges in the old design that I was pretty optimistic that they would fix more than they broke. And that's definitely the case as far as I can tell. So I was pretty excited, and I was really pleased this morning when I saw it.
What's your one favorite thing from your point of view?
I just like the way the pictures look, go full bleed. Yeah. And my second one favorite thing is the performance. You click on the thing to type, you just immediately start typing, and it's everything is a little zippier and nicer. I think the whole thing looks better. We were talking about how we'd love to see it be different or better. If you think about all of the all-purpose social networks, I don't think there's any question that this, this is the best designed of any of them. It's better than Facebook. It's better than any general purpose social network you can think of. I guess it's really hard to cram all that stuff into a single page that's going to look good on everybody's screen. But I think this is pretty darn good.
You talked me down. I feel better. I'm gonna let it grow on me.
Good job, Mike.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh.
High-res photos of Sergey Brin wearing the Google glasses. Not clear whether they actually do anything. He was at a charity event. Robert Scoble got some close-ups.
Of course.
Scoble said Sergey wouldn't let him use them, so it's unclear. some in our on our shows say, oh, that's just because they don't do anything. But Robert said he saw light flickering on Sergey's eyes, light emitting from the glasses. Sergey says
that all they do is reboot.
It just reboots over and over.
Continuous reboots.
Kind of like awesome. My Windows laptop.
That's what I want. Glasses that crash.
I wonder if it's going to say, aw, snap, when it does.
Wouldn't that be great? That's
what happens when you get hit by the car because you're watching your glasses.
I don't think these glasses are ever going to be a mainstream consumer product, by the way. I really don't see it happening. Yeah, it's
who's it for?
I think eventually it'll be something really cool for verticals, for people who have, policemen and, people who have special purposes in professions. But for consumers, I think people think they're going to be walking around like a cyborg, have Terminator vision and have all this data coming down. That's going to be problematic in a number of ways. First of all, Mike, but
imagine this. What if, just to ask. I think you're right if you believed, as that video shows, that it's on all the time. Oh, my God, I'm connected all the time. But what if, without having to pull out your phone, without having to go to anything, you could just say, where do I go? And you could turn it on, for instance, and get some information without having to pull stuff out and turn it off. Would that be, so that it's like your phone, you take it in and out. Would that feel better to you?
Well, first of all, it's not going to work like their video. They were conjuring up things, and it was recognizing 100% of what they said and all that kind of stuff. That's not going to happen. They, in fact, showed an example in New York City. Google Maps does not work in New York City, period.
What?
It will send you to downtown when you're trying to go to uptown. Yeah.
No,
oh, yeah.
It works for me all the time. I use it every day.
Okay. So
I just got to know the secrets, man.
What is the secret?
You got to have the New York
I'm not
boss.
Telling you because you're a bunch of Californians.
Wait a minute. Let me get this clear. I believe the Bronx is up and the battery's down. The people run around in a hole in the ground, right?
If you have an iPhone, the battery's always down.
Snap.
But the other thing that I don't think people realize is this is going to be an uncomfortable experience. Most likely. It's going to be kind of like 3D glasses where you can stand it for a couple of hours. And after that, you're kind of like, because it's going to be putting something into one eye. And it's just going to be, I just can't imagine that this is going to be a comfortable, natural feeling experience.
I think it's going to be the dork factor is going to be the problem. I think it's going to be like a segue. You know what I mean? We're all really excited about it, but now only policemen and like street tours use them. You know what I mean? Like, I think the glasses might be kind of a similar
thing. You're dying to be dorky with this, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
I'm all for
dying to dork.
I think Gina should do a Google Glasses tours of Brooklyn.
Yes.
But me and Zoe Deschanel, adorkable. I'll do it. Absolutely. But I think the dork factor is going to come into it. I really do. Especially in the streets of New York, you're going to get mugged if you have those things on your head. Oh, yeah. Instantly.
What about the creepy factor? People don't know if you're videotaping.
Trapani. We're safer now. That doesn't happen now. You know, people walk around with iPhones and we're okay.
You used to say, don't
take your iPhones out. Now we do.
Not if you're in London. Your iPhone is gone if you have a white headphones.
I don't know if it gets stolen. You might just get beaten up.
Hey. You got jellyfish and other crap in that water on you. We don't have these problems now. You know what? There's no squeegee men either anymore. It's okay now. New York is safe. But you know what? That's the secret. We don't want all you Californians coming with your billion-dollar buyouts and all your cool stuff. We'll build our own world here.
Wow. Completely lost control of this show. Hey, did you like the Edward Muybridge Google Doodle a couple of days ago? I can't show it because I guess it's gone, but I just loved it. Where it was the horses, and it would you click on it, and it would go faster and faster.
Isn't there an archive of Google Doodles?
Is there? I just love it.
I think there is.
Google
chat room.
Maybe if I Googled that, Google Doodle archive, they would have that for me. Yes, there is. Google.com/.
Seek and ye shall get search results.
Oh, here it is. Edward Muybridge's 100. He's the guy who photographed
the horse
to prove a bet that the horse at some point had all four hooves off the ground.
You know whose horse that was?
Whose?
Stanford, the founder of Stanford University.
Oh,
and it took Stanford. Place on the grounds of Stanford University in Palo Alto.
I just think that's a great
Very
doodle.
Cool. Yeah. Leo, if you go to twitter.com/smartarg,
okay.
There's this really neat, similar thing, really neat use of Twitter. I don't know if you guys have seen this. It's smartarg.
ARG?
ARG, yep.
It's a pirate? So,
arg, me matey. So
once it fully loads,
Smart Argentina. No, I've got the wrong one.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's right. Now press J continuously and move down the page. It's a really cool use of animation.
Oh, I see. I have to.
So press J, like use the.
Something's
keyboard
wrong. Maybe it doesn't. I'm not on Chrome. That's why.
Ah.
So I have to do space. Oh wow.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So you can cool. see the car kind of moving along. So what's going on
Boy,
for people listening?
Somebody needs a life.
So. Yeah, no, seriously. Each tweet is an ASCII representation of a car going down a street, and if you J down the page really quickly, you can see the same animation as the horses.
There's a couple. That's pretty funny.
It's pretty neat. It's pretty neat. Sorry.
You know what? It's an advertisement for guess what? The smart car.
The smart car, yeah.
From Argentina.
Sorry to give them free advertising, but that's a really
I don't mind
use of Twitter, and it just reminded me because of the horse animation.
Has anybody else done animations with their tweets? You know, if you followed these guys, you'd be very puzzled. What the hell is going on in my tweets?
Seriously. Oh, yeah. It's completely, you know, impractical.
Right. But, maybe we found a way to monetize Twitter.
ASCII animation.
ASCII animation. It's the future of Twitter.
It's the future of Twitter.
You know, they only have 34. No, they have 1,000 followers. They don't have a lot of followers because you really wouldn't want to follow this.
No.
No, it's true.
I'd set it up so your phone rings each time they post something.
Oh, no, another one.
There are a bunch of dots and lines.
I think there are some interesting uses of Twitter out there. I'm starting to see some clever workaround kind of stuff going on with Twitter. Somebody sent me a link, but I'll have to find it. Let's see what else is big in the news. I guess we have to do some dull stuff. Just going to do it and, you know, try to live with it. Microsoft buying AOL's patents for $1.1 billion. Should that have been a bigger story than Instagram? I don't know.
Sure got
it got buried by the Instagram.
Yeah, the Instagram news just killed that.
So it's 800 patents. Is this the end of AOL? Why are they selling these patents?
Oh, it was a great deal for AOL. Yeah. I'm not so sure about Microsoft. Many of these are expiring soon.
Oh,
many of
really?
These are from the Netscape. Yeah, many of these are Netscape patents.
Well, in fact, that's kind of a funny thing because they're in the statement. There's like, and we're selling a little bit of other stuff. One of the things was Netscape.
Yeah, they hold on to the brand, not that it's worth anything.
Remember, AOL bought Netscape. Now they're selling it to Microsoft, which Netscape basically killed in it's a it, very
maybe 10 years from now we'll laugh about how
killed Netscape, I guess.
Facebook in trouble sells Instagram and what's left of its assets to Twitter.
For a cash injection. Yeah, yeah, to Twitter. They retain the right to use all these patents, yes, though, forever, yes, which was kind of a good deal for them. And mm-hmm, so and there was something interesting going on here. Like, so Microsoft has owns part of Facebook, and so now AOL can't sue Facebook.
I think that was what patents. This was really all about. I bet you Mark Zuckerberg wrote a check for some of this. That's what I think. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because some of these patents were being used against Facebook in the Yahoo Facebook lawsuit.
Oh.
Or it could just be a defense portfolio, right?
Right.
And since there is this nexus between Microsoft and Facebook, I think that's very interesting.
That is interesting. I hadn't thought of that. Well, plus there was some talk, I think it was up there, about maps. And that a lot of the patents are around maps, and this may go after Google on maps. So I'm not sure I agree with that. I'm not sure that's a great battleground.
So you always want to, you know, kind of, there's two ways you could use patents, offensively and defensively. Are these defensive? Or are these, or is Microsoft going to go on the offensive?
But speaking of the institutions that we build when we get what we deserve, God, the patent institution is just
such a mess.
I know we say it every time we bring it up, but this is just an example of an absolute waste of capital.
Yep.
Netscape, ICQ, and MapQuest. Also, CompuServe.
Wow.
Advertising.com. These are some pretty pretty old ones.
714-351-1134.
That 75106,3139. What Jeff and I are saying. do you know what we're talking about, Gina?
Your CompuServe handle.
Very good.
Okay, all right. Good guess. Shot in the dark.
She was like four when CompuServe was sold to AOL. Yeah. There is a termination fee if it doesn't go through of $211 million. So AOL's...
That's the bonanza for AOL.
They're doing good. AOL's going to use some of the money to offset income taxes. The deal, expected to be completed by the end of 2012, includes the sale of an AOL unit. Netscape. I just love that.
Isn't it? That's necessary for taxes.
Yeah, got to get rid of that Netscape thing. By the way, did you see that now the latest to dump Google Maps? Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Foursquare did it.
I think Google Maps was foolish to start charging for it.
I think you're right.
It's de minimis revenue, and it's going to affect their branding. It's going to affect their use data. I think that was a bad move.
Although I don't think there's going to be a lot more of this. I think each of the defectors has its own reason that is different from the other's reasons. For example, an open wiki-based mapping service makes infinite sense for Wikipedia, and Google Maps probably never made sense for them.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. I mean, why did they do this before?
And Apple, who got rid of it for iOS, iPhoto for iOS, that's part of the thermonuclear war. I think Apple's going to be dropping Google products left and right just as, you know, sort of payback for Android indefinitely. As soon as they can get rid of stuff, they're going to get rid of it. I don't see any connection between the two, and I don't see a lot of others lining up to get rid of it. I mean, I could be wrong about that. Plus, I think that Google very well could, ultimately beat them at their own game and kind of open it up and bring a lot more contributions in. And, you know, I can see them doing that as well. So I don't think it's a crisis for Google Maps.
The only thing more exciting than talking about patents is talking about lawsuits. And we're going to do that, too. this is a big story, and I'm sure TNT will be talking a lot about it, as well as our law show this Twill week in law, Twill. Denise Howell. That's coming Friday, by the way. What time is Twill on Friday?
11 a.m. Pacific.
11 Pacific. So tune in a couple of days, and I'm sure Denise and her team of crack lawyers will talk about this. It may not be. It may be over by the time they start talking about it. The Justice Department has filed suit against Apple and a number of publishers over colluding over ebook prices. According to this story by CNET, actually Bloomberg's reporting that most of these publishers are looking to settle today. They're going, okay, you got us. What do you want? Simon & Schuster, Hachette, and News Corp's HarperCollins will settle, according to Bloomberg, as soon as today. Apple and Macmillan are not engaged in settlement talks. They're going to fight it. They've denied wrongdoing And they're going to argue their agreement actually improved the competitive environment.
Yeah, and this is one that's not simple.
It's complicated.
I think Tim O'Reilly has written good stuff about it. The part of the argument, I believe, and I've not followed this closely enough, is that this was an effort to actually get more money into content creators' pockets, and what's right. so bad about that? You know, one wonders why Apple's on the horn here, not Amazon. It's
well, that's what Apple's saying. Hey, we're just trying to compete with Amazon. We're trying to provide
a
competitive environment.
Story.
It's well, tough.
This is something that that I wonder about, because if you do what Amazon does domestically and you do it internationally, it's called price dumping. So, for example, if Samsung sells something in the United States for less than it costs them to make it and less than they sell it in Korea, that is an international trade problem.
Right.
But if you do it domestically, it's legal. So what Amazon often does, they have a thing called the wholesale model where Amazon negotiates a price for content from the publishers. Then they sell it at whatever price they want, which is oftentimes, in the case of electronic books, lower than what they paid for it. They lose money on that ebook. And that's okay for them to do that. Then Apple comes along and says, okay, well, we're going to let the publisher set the price. We'll sell it at any price the publisher wants to sell it, but we get our cut. But they can't go to another, they can't go to Amazon and sell, also use their model. So you have to pick either the agency model or the wholesale model. Take your pick. That was Apple's collusion that the Justice Department sued them over. And that is freaking out the publishing industry, because people kind of thought Apple's model, not Apple per se, but the Apple model of the agency model could save publishing, because it allows publishers to set the price, allows publishers to pay editors and all that stuff. So this should be way more controversial than it is. And I'm not saying that they should crack down on Amazon, and I'm not saying that they should or shouldn't crack down on Apple, but Apple came up with an idea for how the publishing industry could continue to pay editors, continue to pay writers, and all that kind of stuff. Without that model, we don't have an option. We're looking at a future where professionals don't make any money making books.
Wow. Hey, I'm glad you explained that. Thank you.
I'm glad too, because my comments about the story was, I don't get it.
I don't know. Whatever Mike says.
What he said.
Yeah, he's right.
What he said.
We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We've got tips, picks, and more in just a bit. Gina Trapani, Jeff Jarvis, Mike Elgin, and of course our friends at Carbonite.com. Back up, done right. If you're not backing up, you ought to be. You know this. I don't have to tell you this. I might question your strategy if you're just backing up to a hard drive right next to your computer. That's good. I'm not saying don't do it. I do it. I use Time Machine on the Mac. It's great. I use a sync program on Windows. Great. But what happens if there's a fire, flood, somebody breaks in, steals all your stuff? You got to have disaster. You got to have kind of a disaster mentality, disaster protection. And that's where Carbonite is the way to go. Carbonite is backup done right. Carbonite.com, Carbonite. It's three things that every backup has to have: automatic, so you don't have to remember; continuous, so every change to every document gets backed up instantly; and finally, offsite, it's backing up to the internet. By the way, you control the encryption keys if you want to encrypt, so your privacy is 100% protected. Uses SSL, so whenever you're online, even in an open access spot, you're safely, conveniently, and privately syncing your data. This is really great for laptops, because for $59, you can back up everything on that laptop. If you have external drives or multiple computers, they have plans for that too. Go to Carbonite.com. Use our offer code TWIG. You can try it free without a credit card for 2 weeks. TWIG. And if you decide to buy, you get 14 months for the price of 12, which makes it even more affordable. Cloud storage too. You can always log into your Carbonite account on any computer or your iPhone or Android phone or your tablet and see your stuff. So you get cloud storage. You get automatic, continuous, off-site backup. For less than $5 a month, it's a no-brainer. If you don't have a disaster plan, you need Carbonite. Use the offer code TWIG. I'll just run through a couple of other stories and see if there's anything that anybody wants to talk about. The Google Power of the Internet campaign. I got an email. I personally got an email from Vint Cerf. Did you?
Sure. Did you sign up for the? Yeah, you must have done the petition.
We all got that interview, right?
Mika Sifri from Personal Democracy Forum was trying to ask questions about basically lobbying Google about how they could use that email list of people who signed up for the Silva petition to start something ongoing.
Those of us who signed up or signed the SOPA petition got an email from the father of the internet, Vint Cerf, saying, hey, we beat SOPA, but let's not stop now. Let's start a conversation. What does the internet do for you? And interestingly, and I like this, they're using not just Google Plus, but Facebook and Twitter for this.
Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Inclusiveness.
So Gina, complete this sentence. The internet is the power to blank. Have you done it yet?
I wrote a book about that.
Read my book.
I'm reading the ones going by. It's amazing.
It's pretty neat. Dream,
power
collaborate.
Dream, collaborate, and create.
Yep.
Engage.
This is from a church. Engage our congregation. Nice. Yeah. It's okay. Do business on the consumer's terms. I like that. Breathe life into a new business.
I mean, for me, it's reached the thousands of amazing Twig fans that listen to us every week and watch live. I mean, this show itself is such a privilege.
It's huge for me. I mean, the internet gives me the chance to do what I love without having to be beholden to big corporations who control media.
Yeah, the internet is the power to make a living from Santorini.
It's the power to make a living from Santorini. I haven't figured that out yet, but that's a good idea. Let's all go.
That is a good idea.
If I had good Skype connections in Santorini, I'd be there. We need more internet. Anyway, look for an email from Vint Cerf. And even if you didn't get the email from Vint Cerf, I think it was just kind of cool. I have to say it was a little bit of a surprise when I got it. I thought, wow, the father of the internet writing to me. And then I realized, oh, this is it's junk mail. But it's not junk mail. He even said my name, Leo. Earlier this year, you did something amazing. What a great way. That's a good lead.
Google bot loves you, Leo.
The Google bot loves me. See, all is forgiven. All is forgiven. So google.com/takeaction/start-something. So this is Google Take Action like going to be their...
I think this should be something bigger. I think it's right for them to start off in this general
starting.
Way. But Google and Facebook and Twitter should be defending the internet. I keep on coming back to it.
I agree.
There's all these efforts to control the internet. It's frightening institutions. Institutions are being disrupted. I can launch into that again, geeks.
Yep.
And they're not defending the net enough. Neither are we.
Well, this
all.
Is a start.
It's a start, and I want a lot more of it.
I want to see more. You're right. Okay, good. We got some good discussion out of that. Let me see what else. I just want to make sure we don't miss anything. Did you see that they're going to now add Windows to Chrome books, to Chrome OS? That was very strange.
Yeah, I don't get that.
It is kind of like, what's going on with Chrome OS?
It's not requiring full screen anymore. Google Chrome Beta 9 brings live tab syncing. What?
I like that.
So if you have a bunch, I'm not a big tab guy. I mean, I have a few open right now, but most geeks have hundreds of tabs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Why? What's wrong with you people?
Lack of attention span for me.
Is it a form of hoarding? Yeah. Like, well, I don't want to close this window. I might need it someday.
Yeah, I'll read that thing. Later. I'm like, I want to do a thing with that page, and I just haven't gotten to it yet.
How many tabs do you have open right now, Gina? Do you know?
I mean, enough that I'm only seeing like one letter plus the fave icon.
Yeah.
But, we're doing the show, so I basically have all the
stories. All the stories are open.
That we're working
22
on.
22 for me.
22.
I have a Chrome extension that lets me select an infinite number of links and then click a single button to open all of them in tabs. And I use it constantly. So I usually have, anywhere between 30 and 60 or so. Going.
I can see bloggers, somebody like you, because you're doing a lot of research.
Yeah.
You're looking for
when
links.
Chrome crashes and it can't restore my tabs, it's this Zen lesson in that I own nothing, It's like it's all just gone every time.
And even I lose my pin tabs. I worked hard to have my half dozen pin tabs and they're gone.
Yeah, the pin tabs too. It's like my house isn't set up if the pin tabs aren't there. Chrome is a great product.
YouTube Live now adds pay-per-view, which is very interesting. You can now monetize your live events with advertising or paid options. A live event can be claimed in a new video manager, just like any video, and monetized with in-stream ads or paid options.
And you I don't see that working for mass things, but I can imagine it working for kind of B2B things.
They've been using it for UFC, which is does a lot of pay-per-view stuff. This is off the Google. Somebody sent me a note saying, oh, now you can put your own ads into your YouTube Live. I don't know if that really is true or not.
And so how does that work, Leo? Is that
I don't know.
They won't let you on YouTube Live because you just read your own ads?
Well, we wanted to be part of YouTube Live. I've always wanted to be because I would love another. Right. We have three live, four or five live streaming partners. You know, Big Gravity, Ustream, Justin.tv, and I would like more ways to get us, BitTorrent Live. And so we, as soon as YouTube Live came out, they put Jason Calacanis's This Week on, so I thought, Callie's on, Callie Lewis. So I thought, oh, we should. So we called him, a sales rep called us who didn't know us from Adam.
Oy.
And he said, well, you know, you can't have ads. I said, I don't understand. So Revision 3 has one ad, so maybe they made a side deal. Anyway, I don't think this means we can have our own ads, so we can't be part of YouTube Live, which is too bad because I really would like to be. But
did they ever give you any hassle about having ads in just recorded videos?
You mean like on YouTube?
Yeah.
No.
That's not an issue there at all.
I don't think so. Should it? Oh, don't bring it up.
Oh, sorry.
I wouldn't ask. Yeah, don't ask.
Really? I didn't even think of that. will there be a .YouTube or a .Google? Google confirmed on Tuesday it will apply for a generic TLD. Remember the ICANN said now if you have $100 million or whatever it is, you can get your own trademarked TLD. Google has applied for the use of Google's trademarked TLDs. Those applications closed on April 12th. Google didn't say exactly which TLDs it had applied for, but you got to figure, I don't know, maybe there'll be .go. Is there a .go? That'd be good. YouTube seems long.
Oh, ABC still owns, I think, go.com.
Could you just have a plus sign? Could it be dot plus sign? Wouldn't that be cool?
No.
I don't think it
doesn't sound right.
I don't think it's a valid character in the top level domain, right?
No. I think they added Unicode in the top level domains.
Oh, you might be right.
Oh, well, that's a point.
Nobody. I mean,
amazing.
I don't know. Or dot. I guess you could do dot plus. Facebook did not apply for a top level domain by the deadline.
Dot Zuck.
Dot Zuck. he's rich. He could afford the dot Zuck, yeah. And only he could have it. That would be so cool,
wouldn't it?
Yeah. All right. Let's get our. I guess I should mention this. Hillary Clinton likes.
This is great.
Love this.
Is it true that she likes it, or just Politico says?
Oh, no. It's no. She met the guys. It's great.
She autographed it. Hills. So I didn't know this, but there's apparently a Tumblr log called "Text from Hillary." I haven't read it. Is it funny?
It's
hilarious.
Funny.
That picture you just had up of Hillary looking really tough.
Yeah.
And so people just imagine what's on the other end of that text.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
what could she have written? So they put a picture. Okay. Sup, Adam. Nice selfie, Stace. OMG, busted. Sorry, Hills. ROFL, your Tumblr. G2G, scrunchy time? TTYL. I don't need it. So there's a Vice President Biden with the Obama looking over his shoulder, looking at their iPhone. Vice President Obama, Biden says she's going to love this new Justin Bieber video. She texts back to work, boys.
It's such a badass photo.
That's a great photo.
Photo of her, and there's so many great. Yeah.
Huffington Post, Hillary?
That's Ariana.
HillaryPost.com. Guess what I just bought, says Mark Zuckerberg walking in front of a blue truck. A shirt with a big boy collar? Oh. Apparently there are quite a few pictures of Hillary texting.
Oh, wow. It's just that one.
It's the same one, they just flip it? Yeah. No, that's different. Look at these are two different pictures.
Oh, they're actually. They're
she does it a lot. By all means, move at a glacial pace. You know that thrills me. Daily Show this week. Texts Jon Stewart. Already booked Colbert. says Hills. This is funny. So she likes it. Why wouldn't she? It's great publicity, right?
Right.
Adam Smith, who created the Tumblr account with his friend Stacey Lamb, both communications professionals from Washington, D.C., said after they met with the Secretary of State that he was still in shock. He got invited to the State Department. Okay. That would scare me, right? Oh, God.
Yeah. My favorite is when Rachel Maddow texted her, girls, and she wrote back, run the world. You got the Beyonce reference. I mean, there's just like so much to love about that.
Wow. I'm absorbing it. It was great, he said. She came out. She was all smiles. She told us how much she likes the site and that people have been telling her about it. She just thinks it's great. And she even submitted something featuring pictures of the two men with herself. That's really great. And she autographed it. Thanks for many lols, signed Hills. Good. You'd like it when the Secretary of State has a sense of humor. Far less likely to go to nuclear war. Let us get our tip, our number, and our tool of the week. And if you, at any point, Mike Elgin, would like to throw down with any of those three or anything you can think of, just raise your hand and I'll call on you. But first, it's Gina Trapani and her tip of the week.
A lot of Google junkies like us have more than one Google account. And we were actually complaining about this a couple of episodes ago that Google supports multiple sign-in, but it doesn't work across all the products. And it's kind of clunky. It'll sign you out here and there. Well, subtle change, recent change, the Google system, Google operating system, excuse me, blog picked up that they're making account switching a little bit easier. Now, when you click on the little cog, or the profile picture in the upper right-hand corner to switch accounts, you'll see your list of Google accounts listed there, and you can choose one. Before, it was, you'd have to click on another link that said sign into another account.
Right.
So they just reduced a click. So very subtle change, a little bit easier. The second part of this tip is, we got an email from a very helpful Googler about our rant about this multi-account sign-in. And I think Jeff and I were talking about how much of a pain it is. And this Googler basically said, multi sign-in doesn't work as well as we would like across all of our products. It's an internal discussion at Google all the time. We want to implement this, well and securely. And an alternative, while it's still rolling out to all our products, is to use Chrome's user profile switching. So in Chrome, you can enable multiple user profiles where you sign into one account in one Chrome window using one profile and you sign into another with another. It's
sense.
A little clunky, a little bit of a pain, but that is actually a pretty cool feature of Chrome. And you also get the benefit of all your tabs and bookmarks and stuff syncing across those accounts as well. So multi-sign-in getting a little bit easier in web pages and a solution if it drives you crazy like it does us every once in a while. Whenever I check my Android app sales, Google Checkout doesn't handle it well. You can use multi-profile support in Chrome itself.
That's a good.
Just today, I was on Google Plus. I erased my curses because I do tend to get a little overboard. I know that. Because what happens is it falls out of sync at some point. So I lost my Chrome. I got my Chrome back. And then I would sign into one account and then try to go to the other one. So no, you can't. You're in the other account. So I would sign into that account. Then I would sign me out the first account. And then I would go to another window and I would do that. And it would just drive me nuts. Mm-hmm. And I literally had to do it a dozen times. And then suddenly I got the sequence right. It's like an old game, twist the thing left first and then right, raise your left foot, and then it lets you do it. And I cannot figure out what makes it work.
Yeah, it's definitely wonky. So I don't know. It might be worth enabling multi-user profiles and you just switch between browser profiles.
But then you got to switch between browser windows.
Right.
So you don't get the benefit of tabs. I have my pinned tabs. I have my one Gmail account next to my other Gmail account, next to my Google Plus, which is associated with one of them, next to my documents, which is associated with the other one. Just because I would have made sense of this, but this is the way it developed, Google. I had to do all these things.
You're too far gone. Forward your email from one Gmail account to the other.
No!
And just two plus another window.
No! Jeff, your number of the week.
Numbers, plural. So everybody, numbers. I hear on all these shows, everybody, oh, Google, they're evil. Oh, I don't want Google to have that. Oh, nobody likes Google. Google's going down. Well, ABC Washington Post did a poll and found that everybody loves Raymond and Google. 82% are favorable to Google, 9% unfavorable. The rest don't know.
Wow.
That. Apple, 74%. Facebook, 58%. Twitter, interestingly, 34% favorable, 36% unfavorable, 31% don't know. But no question here, the world loves Google. So we're going to keep calling the show This Week in Google.
You know, it's interesting to me how many in the world don't love Twitter.
Isn't that amazing?
Why do people hate Twitter so much?
I don't know. I think the don't know number is very significant there, which may have some impact. But yeah, just to say that you
what
don't.
What is it? What is it? Twitter? What is
don't
that?
Like Twitter. you know what? I think it could be a couple things. It could be one. Number one, it could be most likely that the reputation is, oh, the breakfast service. Yeah, I heard of that. Or number two, it could be, well, isn't that where people spread bad rumors and things?
Right.
Yeah.
Or number three could be, what a stupid thing. I just don't like it. You know, I guess that's possible too.
You never know. People are people. I was going to do SpringPad, but I can't remember my password. So it's worth noting. It's a Chrome app, but there's iOS and Android apps as well for SpringPad, and they've relaunched in kind of an interesting way, but I can't show you because I'm waiting for them to send me my password. But it's got more social in it. It was always a notepad app, kind of like an Evernote that I liked a lot. I think I'd recommended it in the past. If you haven't used SpringPad in a while or if you've never used it, go to the Chrome store, install it, and take a look. Meanwhile, I'm going to actually show you something that's frankly a hell of a lot more useful than anything anybody said in this entire show. It is the Zombie Survival Map. A map of the dead.com. When the zombie apocalypse.com comes, I just created a new thing, the zombie apocalypse.com. This is me in Petaluma. You see I'm armed heavily, and it will show me the gun store, the convenience store, the hardware store, the liquor store, the outdoor store, military, police, radio towers, gas stations, harbors, hospitals, everything you need to survive the zombie apocalypse, including the location of the nearest cemetery, which, of course, is where they'll all be coming from. It's a Google Map mashup.
Map of the Dead wants to track your physical location, Chrome tells me.
Hell yeah.
Deny?
No. It'll show you danger zones. It'll show you no danger zones. I mean, this is good. Right now, there are no zombies in the area. So, you know, this, I feel much better. I feel much
Will
better.
Will the internet be running when the apocalypse comes? Better memorize all this.
This is good. Mapofthedead.com. We see the red zones. That's where the zombies could be. And look, here's a Department of Homeland Security installation I didn't even know about. So that's good to know. Map
people, people who need lives.com.
You know, planning for the zombie apocalypse is not optional. Mike Elgin, did you have anything you'd like to share at this juncture?
Just a quick thing. People always ask me, how do I automate a bunch of stuff? Where did I get my RSS feed for Google Plus? How do I automate posting to Twitter, et cetera, et cetera? And the best resource that I'm aware of is a site called sociologyplus.com.
Wow.
And this is basically an all-purpose information resource / blog for Google Plus. But the upper right-hand corner has a menu item called Tips and Resources, under which you can find an option called Guides. And the top item there links to 11 categories of tips, guides, and resources.
This is great. And
yeah, so you see Tips and Resources over on the right on the top. Mm-hmm. It's a great site just for learning about Google Plus and all the things that are possible. But these resources, if you look under, like, for example, if you look at Section 8,
Extensions, tools, and apps. And I presume they're keeping this up to date, right?
Yes, I believe they are. But this is just, there are so many different resources available for, you know, browser plugins and like all kinds of services that exist that let you automate things, optimize things. You can do things like, you know, on TV when you're on Fox News and they put the Jeff Jarvis and BuzzMachine.com or whatever underneath. You can do that for Hangouts. You can have your own.
I was wondering. That's cool.
Your own lower third.
Yeah.
But there's just, you can spend all your time on this site finding ways to customize and automate Google Plus.
You think I appear on Fox News?
No.
Okay.
They asked me once. there you go. It's called Sociology Plus. Sociology, SociologyPlus.com. The sociology of Google Plus. That's where you'll find Mike Elgin. If you just go to Elgin, ELGAN.com, he'll pull you right to his Google Plus account. You should follow him there. He also writes for Computer World. And anything else you want to plug?
Just every Thursday morning at 9 o'clock, I do a live streaming hangout. Nice. Almost never about tech, but I find communities on Google Plus of people who are doing interesting things. For example, I did one on Lego Maniacs at Chris Perillo and other Lego Maniacs, and we talk about their passions and how they use Google Plus to build community around their whatever it is they're doing. I did filmmakers. We did. Even skateboarders, stuff like that. It's a lot of fun. It lasts only half an hour, and Thursday morning at 9 a.m.
I'll have to join. Thank you.
Yeah, it's called The Flying Circle.
Jeff Jarvis is a professor of journalism at the City University of New York, the author of Public Parts, his latest book, and, of course, don't forget the Amazon single, Gutenberg the Geek.
You said it. I didn't.
Follow him on everywhere, Google Plus and Twitter. The hated Twitter at Jeff Jarvis. Gina Trapani blogs at smarterware.org. And she's also the author of Think Up, the amazing app at thinkupapp.com. And she's living long and prospering. Because
something too.
What is that word that you use that you and Zoe are?
Dorkable.
Dorkable.
I aspire to be she's the dorkable as Zoe
Deschanel. I'm telling you, it's our new show on Twit. Gina Trapani is a dorkable.
I'm there.
I think it's great.
In the
we
classes,
didn't do
on the
any Glee guys. One twit length review.
Is there a new Glee? Was there a new Glee?
New Glee last night. Best song was the last 5 minutes, which Eileen sent me the YouTube video last week. Really good. But you know what? The Glee cast was on Inside the Actors Studio this week on Bravo. It was also very good. I won't bore you all, but yeah, it's
the whole
cast, really.
Wow, that would be cool.
Writing storylines not so great. Music still pretty good.
Yeah, the storyline's just
that's
really
my tweet
love
review.
No, not as crazy storyline. And I just wanted to complete the drinking game. You're welcome, world.
They're all passed out.
And thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. TNT is coming up next.